Recording now, and just to quickly get started, you know, for most of the folks that are on the call, I think you guys are well aware of the antitrust policy and the code of conduct, but if not, it is available on the media agenda. So moving forward to any announcements, are there any announcements for any that you guys have for the meeting today? All right.
Mm-hmm.
There aren't any particular announcements. Just to quickly go through a couple of the discussion items that we've been talking a little bit about. A few things that we've been doing is just, you know, working on some of the work streams and projects that we've identified since the beginning of the year. A few of them have been, you know, developing out a new member center, resource center, and then also working on the blog post for the social impact. Just wanted to make just follow up on this. So here is the draft of some of the discussion points that we had talked about. Here are some of the links that we had discussed, as well as some things that we can focus on, which such as like the decentralized society, transparent philanthropy and humanitarian aid, immutable governance, and then some of the use cases that we have in here. Was there anything in, you know, we should you know, consider adding, or anything that we missed in some of our previous discussions? Karen, also thank you for joining today, because I wanted to also get your input on what your thoughts are for this blog post as well. But a couple of things that, you know, I think stem from this being a little bit different from some of the other blog posts that we anticipate having. This one's going to be mostly focusing on the changes that we've witnessed through the pandemic. And obviously it's still ongoing in many cases, but you know, how this has changed us from a societal perspective, and then how blockchain technology or some emerging technologies can come into play in finding, you know, new business models, new ways that we can reorganize the way that we interact with each other, and new ways that information could be shared across the board. So thinking that through, I did want to open up a couple things. So a few things that we did discuss more intricately was the changes to agriculture, like supply chain, with the pandemic. So thinking of, you know, back in March, April, a lot of the shelves in the grocery stores were pretty barren because it disrupted our supply chain. And I believe there was a use case that that Alicia had talked about, which is on reallocating food waste, and then couple other things were, you know, changing in the energy generation consumption profile, since most people are nowadays working from home as opposed to going into the office during the 9 to 5. It's changing the way that we're consuming and generating our, you know, those profiles, pushing that more or less to the edge. A couple other things were identity focus. I think Bobby mentioned this one was the COVID tracking. So you know, given the current, I know in New York State where we have COVID trackers, a lot of these solutions could also be put on a distributed ledger as a potential way of resolving those. Another thing was healthcare with HIPAA regulations, you know, increased efficiency across the board. You have folks that are going into hospitals and, you know, you want to better identify the current cases that they're dealing with, and if they are or not COVID related. And then also, Sean had mentioned waste management, rewards management, and contracts, and PFAS. So different ways that this could change during these times. Some other things have been like donation focused, benefit tracking and matching. So so things like, you know, PPPs, different types of donations that we've seen. I know, you know, I saw a lot of use cases on donations to schools, to school students that, you know, unfortunately rely on the school education system to provide lunches and food for them during the days. So that's something, as well as like PPE procurement, cashless digital currencies, digital financing for the SDGs. So a couple of the different reports that Mark had mentioned being released in this time. And then a couple other things are on the mutable governance, such as, you know, new ways for voting, as well as social justice issues that have arisen over the past course of the past couple months. So that's just kind of like a brief summary of some of the topics that we talked about. the main thing, I think going from this is, solidifying the different topics and trends that we're seeing, and then also, incorporating into it different things that we've noticed. So like companies that are that have arisen during these times that are, tackling some of these issues. And then also identifying any missed opportunities that are still present within this market. So after my very long-winded kind of overview of this, is there anything that you guys have, any thoughts, ideas that we can incorporate into this, or anything we should discuss a little bit more so that we're all on more or less the same page about this?
I did have a question. So as far as the blog posts, or is there a and maybe this is me not knowing already, but as far as the a current blog that's being worked on, or a template, or a word count that we're looking for, just so it's if we do start drafting things up, it's it'd be consistent with others.
Mm-hmm. So based on some of the blog posts I've seen from like the Hyperledger, I don't think there is necessarily a space restriction.
Hey, Nancy, it's Bobby. We have on the Learning Materials Working Group, if you go to any of the meeting notes, which are usually right on the home page, we have a blog section we go over, and it shows you the form to fill out when you want to send the blog in, and then it has a link to show you the blog. So it's right on the home page of the Learning Materials Working Group.
Learning Materials. Thank you very much.
But I think the main thing we want to do is make sure that the blog post captures the audience's attention without going into an abundance of details. Because I feel like ones that are too long, sometimes people get lost, and some of it gets a little lost in translation. So from that perspective, I think you raise a really good point. That
you can make it a multi-part blog, right? Like part one.
Yeah.
And that might even be a better strategy.
Yeah, one thing we could do is just have this be like kind of an overview, and then like we could do like a part A, part B, right? Like diving more deeply into these things, especially given like, I think the first one is just mostly to set a tone for some of the discussion points we want to have, and then having folks, hopefully people will give us feedback as well on their thoughts and where their interests are. I don't know, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, it's hard to judge where people's interests are, but I think with the COVID trackers and that whole environment changing, I know I missed the COVID call with the COVID credentials group, but they were more talking about shifting or pivoting what they were working on instead of tracking the people who have come in contact. They more want to pivot towards some kind of universal interface that shows that you've been immunized, so that they're moving towards the next phase of COVID rather than try to, work on stopping it. They're working on, okay, now proving you've been immunized. So I don't know if that's something we want to focus like the first part on, because it's on everybody's mind. Mm-hmm.
So I'll add that to that. So, but given the current status of the immunization process, I know there's been ongoing debates on whether you can actually be immunized from or have immunity from COVID. So is that something that, I don't know if the discussion was around that, but like, as an outset of this, is the focus going to be more or less on, if you have taken the immunization shots, or is it like, have you had it before and are you going to get it again? Is that?
Well, I think that's what the governance, because there's four sections to the COVID credential initiative. And one of them is the rules and governance. And I think that that's something that they're talking about. Again, I'm not that familiar with the immunization process or anything medical. So I don't know. I'm just assuming and kind of saddened me a little, will think that you can't get immunized. I'm just hoping that we can. So that's something that I didn't sit in on the governance issues, like what is going to qualify you for passing this test that you can prove you've been immunized. I have no idea what the requirements of that are. But again, that's something that, again, people would be interested in knowing.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Do you have like a link to the event that you were just talking about, or the consortium?
Yeah, sure do. I'll put it in the chat.
Okay, that'd be great. Awesome. And then the other thing, so Bobby, talking about the project that you were working on also for the donations perspective. So do you have like links that we can add to that? I think it would be great to highlight different ways that we can help out the community too, more directly from like the philanthropy perspective as well.
Well, it's interesting that you put voting and social justice, because when we were going through the slides last week, we were like towards the end. So we went through those very quickly. And the previous winners, again, I won for the social impact giving chain. The one woman, Amelia Gardner, won for, she's doing blockchain voting for vets that are, she's a county clerk, and she's doing all sorts of initiatives on getting fairness into her county. And the things she's done, I highlighted a little bit more on the slides. And the last gentleman who won the voting issue, he was in Guatemala. He was verifying the validity of votes, of ballots, so that there's no voter fraud in the elections in Guatemala. So again, they're doing great things. I've reached out to the guys at the Government Blockchain Association for more information on how you apply and, you know, what process you need to follow. And they haven't gotten back to me yet. And I've been really like trying to reach out. So hopefully I'll have more information on what that process looks like. But for right now, it's the same information from last week.
Okay. But so you mentioned the use case that had won for the voting. Do you happen to have like a point of contact for that one? It would be great to kind of get their perspectives on.
Sure. And I think he might even be interested. Let me just go to the slide real quick. Can I share my screen or is that impossible?
Yeah, go for it.
Okay, let me see if I can do that. Share screen. Okay, I can't share while you're sharing.
I just paused. Let me stop sharing then.
Okay, there you go. Okay, so again, this was going to be the... So do you see my screen with a presentation? Yep. So I'm just gonna go through it real quick because everybody has kind of seen all this stuff. So at the end, let me just control this from the other screen. Hold on, I have to jump screens. Oh no, it's not gonna work, sorry. You have to watch the whole thing really, really fast. Don't worry, the pictures are coming and then we're done. Okay, so these were the four categories. And again, the first, they were looking for leadership. And this is Amelia Powers Gardner. And she is the county clerk of Utah. And she received her recognition for the reforms that she did as county clerk. She did the... first implementation of mobile voting overseas and disabled voters to launch online. And then she did digital marriage licenses. So she's well ahead of her, you know, role there. She's so innovative and that's why she won that award or the leadership award. And then Frank was doing something with medical, but this is the gentleman whose courage, because Carlos, and I can try to reach out to him and see if he can come on and give us a presentation. His company was Fiscal Digital, and they work to audit this election on a blockchain. And again, when he did this presentation, this was what was so interesting about it. By him coming out and saying, I'm the one who did this, he was like putting his face on this very dangerous movement in Guatemala. So that was why he got courage, because by just presenting this project was basically saying, you know, you can now pinpoint me as the manager of this, which was courageous for his part. But I will see if I can get in touch with him and see if he wants to talk about what he had done with the physical digital.
Wow, that would be great, and especially very powerful, I think, for us to
hear about the discussion. So
awesome. So I'll add probably like highlighting physical digital, and then probably Amelia's use cases as ways that we could also highlight the different voting.
And I can definitely reach out to Amelia and see if she has time.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Okay, made a note.
Thank you. So going on from that, so Mark, I see that you're also on the call today. Did you want to talk about the Wyoming blockchain hackathon later?
Yeah, I mean, I was going to, and hello, everyone. I just had some issue with getting the, it was passworded for the first time, so it took me a bit to figure that out. Yes, the WIO hack is, I was just going to send this Discord scene around. I can, I'll send you the link, because there's a few things that were posted on DevPost. I think also the part on voting might be very interesting. Interesting to those as well. I have to try to just get this pulled up. Yeah, and there's going to be, there's an SDG themed challenge in there as well. So volunteering for the SDGs, financing for the SDGs, social impact for the SDGs, and then sort of specific aspects to the technology, because it was sort of, it's driven by the challenge was driven by the hackathon organizers, but these could inspire the part of the SDGs, but I'll send in the link for those, because there's also one on blockchain voting challenge. So we just discussed that, obviously very topical right now. I think the comment was made, everyone is, you know, there's a lot of discussion around mail-in voting, but obviously if you look at the where the technology is and compare that to posted paper ballots, which I had just sent in one myself, yeah, you can have massive improvements to security, accuracy, and reporting through stuff with decentralized technology. So I think that is very topical.
So Mark, is there a list of the different topics that people can, I guess, hack towards for the?
Yeah, I just put the link. I just put the link to this particular.
Okay.
The challenges that are in this one, they're not huge amounts, but I think. And I did note that, I don't know if Hyperledger has actually participated in this. Didn't seem like it. It is a public, you know, it is a hackathon. It's not really, there's many private ones popping up. There's a lot of, all the prize money does go to the winners. It's run by volunteers, and it's sort of facilitated through the university. So, it brought on a lot of, I think for its small size, it has an outsized participation from tech players and others. Also the Wyoming is a very favorable, there was a whole section on law and sort of the legal enabling environment that's occurring in Wyoming. I think it's actually happening in a few jurisdictions around the world, but I think it was very integral. I'm a lawyer, so obviously I find this interesting, but I think it does have impact generally in how this can be really integrated. Also in looking at the law, a lot of the changes really are around crypto assets and DeFi. So not always necessarily purely within the remit of social impact, I would say. Mm-hmm. Because that's obviously where the money that's driving those legislative changes. And I think there's a, for example, there was, they're giving maybe banking licenses that can then be, they're storing, I think either they're either holding, they're doing a stable coin model of banking, but I think either just also just sort of purely crypto virtual currency, digital currencies, sort of looking at having banking licenses. So it's sort of regulated. Yeah, I didn't fully read into it, but it sounded to me like you're regulating a stablecoin market to address some of the concerns from the stablecoins where people are questioning or there wasn't enough audits if you're actually, you know, if the money's there. In the case there's like a run on the bank. You know? Mm-hmm. So, but I think they're looking a little bit broader. Also in like in DAOs that, again, it's more for profit-seeking entities, like LLCs and these types of models. But I wasn't, because of the time difference, I wasn't able to sit in these legal discussions, but I was just reading what I could find. So I just find it personally quite interesting. And I do think, obviously, legislative changes will, and regulatory changes will be driving a lot of direction of technology. So as states and other jurisdictions sort of experiment, I think that's also going to be sort of the legal innovation that will be influenced by or influence the development of blockchain technologies in general, including in the social impact space. Mm-hmm.
Well, this is certainly a great opportunity. And, you know, it's, I think in line with what you just said, you know, just even looking at these, it seems like the solutions that are going to be developed through these challenges actually, you know, are going to be like a pipeline into actually seeing that happen in real life. And it seems like Wyoming is definitely on the cutting edge and, you know, very willing to accept new types of technology. So that's definitely very interesting in this. Is this one of the ones that, I think you mentioned like the social good ones. Is this the one that you were referring to for the UN?
Yeah, so if you look, there's this, there's one for blockchain for social good, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
So it's around the SDG specifically.
Okay.
But, and then if you look at the top, there's also this blockchain voting that I think was, it's funded by, it's a foundation, I think it was the Pew Charitable Trust, but it was something like that. I'm just off the top of my head, I haven't seen it written yet. But there's a foundation that was actually sponsoring that one in looking at, you know, experimenting with new ways to support safe and secure elections.
Maybe if I go into the challenge details. Can you guys see the, I'm on the link ring. I don't know if you guys can see it. Oh, this one's not, let me go in. Never mind. All right. So unfortunately, I don't think the challenge details is loading on my end. Maybe it'll load for a second.
The UN challenge details is a PDF. It's on,
yeah,
it should just pop up.
Giving me this XML file does not appear.
Are you, do you have a Discord account?
I do not, but the social good one, that one, it's
the social good one.
Yeah, it's
it should just be a PDF.
Okay, so a couple of the themes then on this one are microfinance, continuous funding and accounting for risks. Okay, very cool. So if any of the folks on the call are interested, it seems like the, you know, these are the criterias for the selection of these. But this is, yeah, this is a great opportunity. So I'm looking at the dates. So has it already started or is it still possible for
folks? Yeah, it already started and it's going, it's actually not, you know, as many of these hackathons are quite short in duration. But this is actually going to be quite a, it's actually, they're really hoping for some high quality. So please circulate.
Absolutely.
Because there's actually quite a bit of time and I think there's going to be, unfortunately it was, and this is just, and how it was arranged. It was meant to sort of be really technology agnostic at the beginning, but it's sort of the decision of the organizers. So it's sort of more technology specific. That's their decision, but nonetheless, I think at least it should bring up some really great models, which would be an inspiration. So I'm looking forward to seeing what ultimately comes out of it. Personally, I think we would have gotten more if it was a bit more open from the different platforms one could use. But.
Sounds good. So one thing we can do is we can surface this link to the mailing list just so that everyone has it, especially for folks that aren't attending the call.
Great. That's great.
Yeah. Sounds great. So kind of going back to this I know Mark just joined, but one of the things we just wanted to kind of come back to the blog post to see if there were any discussion points, trends that we are missing, or anything that we can elaborate a little bit more on. We're just trying to get some more information and scope out the next phase of this blog post.
Nancy, could you repeat that, what you just said? I just had to turn the volume 1 second.
Oh, no worries. I was just saying, since Mark just joined, I was just saying that, what we were just in the middle of discussing some of the social impact, like the blog post details. And it's coincidental that we're just talking about the voting, but if there were any other things that you guys have come across so far, we'd love to add those to this thing. And as well as also getting your help on writing some of these out. So if there are any topics that you guys are interested in adding to this or contributing to this and helping with writing, feel free to let us know on the call or just start dropping your name next to some of these things.
Okay, that works.
So Sean, would you be interested in the waste management one?
Yeah. Drop my name on there. I actually just was looking at the the blog that Bobby was mentioning. So I just looked at a couple of them. So I took some of the flow that they had, how they sort of spoke about it, and I'm gonna go ahead and craft up something. I can send it over just for some initial edits, and then I like what was mentioned about doing different parts, because there's obviously a lot to talk about. So being able to break it up into a part one, part two, part three, a little series will be interesting, and also give us some content to keep the blog full. So
awesome, that sounds great. So I will put my name for this one. Add something to that.
I just wanted to flag. I just saw that the you had to interested parties would have to have expressed interest by the 26th September. So unfortunately, I think they're going to be passed. But potentially others in the future.
I'm sorry, Mark. I couldn't quite catch that. It could be. It's a little louder.
No, I was just saying to enter that those specific challenges. Uh-huh. So the WIO hack, interested participants had to submit their, or express their interest by the 26th. Now, I don't know if they'll accept a late submission, but just to flag that the deadline's already passed.
Okay, sounds good. Thank you. Yeah, well, if folks are at least interested in listening in and seeing some of the innovation that's happening, so that could also hopefully be helpful. So Mark, I know you had sent over some of the digital financing for the SDGs, like the reports and stuff like that. Is that something that you're currently exploring and like interested in exploring a little bit more?
I mean, in that report, it's very high level. So it was just, it was just sort of, something globally, I think that, was sort of set forth as a challenge in looking at how this technology, both that's already emerging, across the globe, and then how really, the report, if you look at it, it really takes stock of what's happening, what some of that potential is, what some of those challenges are, and then lays out some broad-based recommendations on how this should then be going towards what's already in the SDGs, for example, things like financial inclusion and what that means. And then really thinking around how best this can be sort of harnessed so that you're getting, you're optimizing your opportunities and you're minimizing and mitigating the risks associated in the challenges that this poses. So I think that's actually like a broad question around the world. It's also sending it to like the member state governments and looking at like the regulatory frameworks. I think that's why this legal discussion is quite relevant, because those environments will ultimately shape a lot of that. And there isn't that much that I've seen personally in the regulatory and legal reform space that is specifically targeted in social impact. Mm-hmm. So and that might just be due to the nature of the fact that there's a lot of money and resources in the DeFi space. And so that's getting the most attention. There's also a lot of risk there, right? So you do need the higher risk, the need for regulation, which makes perfect sense at some level. But I think also the opportunity for the social impact space has not yet been tapped from a legal reform and regulatory standpoint. And I do think eventually that will be a topic. And I think there could be some potential if this group or similar groups are looking at what are the best practices in a legal reform or regulatory environment that would really best promote the social impact coming out of blockchain technology, and what regulations would then support that in an optimal manner. I think that is a very real discussion that I haven't seen as much as I personally would like to see, because I think so much attention has been paid sort of in the cryptocurrency and DeFi space, which does again relate to this digital financing for the SDGs also. But I think then it's about how those ecosystems, I think as you look a little further on how those fully integrated digital ecosystems that have financing aspects to it, but then are more integrated in a larger ecosystem, how that then is supporting social impact and how that's regulated. And this gets also into questions of like any other technologies that are other similar frontier technologies that are interrelated, such as ethical artificial intelligence, for example. So it's hard to separate them all out. But I think these are all very live topics. I think it's, you know, there's some, especially on AI, and also getting a lot of attention, I think, ethical AI. But I think then that does then get into what, for example, if you have smart contracts, what those trigger points are, if those triggers are being automated or mostly automated, then the ethical AI, and that's coming in from data that's being driven by these algorithms, then I think it is looking at like the ethics of those algorithms and that, looking at the data that it's being pulled from, and then what standards are set forth and what protections are there that then those, so you automate those triggers, or even if you're not automating those, because once it goes on chain, it has that mutable characteristic, which, you know, the negative side could be you can have, you know, run disastrous things on it. So I think that's just one tiny example of risk that needs to be mitigated. But then I think also really thinking about how you can have forms such as NGO legal aspects that are then given the same legal form in these virtual structures, such as a DAO, that you're getting also right now. And that's a little bit what the legal reform is happening in some of these jurisdictions, where they're giving. The law will treat like a DAO that is set up in a very similar way to LLC, for example, or some sort of private sector or, you know, profit-seeking entity, the same legal status, and then they can contract. It has all the same rights and obligations as it would if it was paper-based. So I think that's sort of where a little bit where those discussions will be going, but there hasn't been huge breakthroughs in any of the jurisdictions of this that I've, you know, looked at in any of the research coming through. So I think that is something that's a wait and see, but it would be great to see something emerge out of that. And maybe it's a topic to raise, because I think it is, there's a real need.
Thanks, Mark. You know, I think kind of continuing what you've been talking about, the policy and regulation, I remember seeing like in the early, like the beginning of this year, the Federal Reserve announced that they're actually actively exploring the concept of a digital currency. And I'm kind of curious, you know, you mentioned that there's still not enough efforts that are done and, you know, in the philanthropy space, but what do you think are the potential gaps or areas that policy and regulatory like aspects or stakeholders need to kind of take a look at, or something that still is missing, or, you know, ways that it can improve? Because I'm kind of curious, like, I haven't done much research into this aspect of it, but I'd be curious to like understand a little bit more of where the gaps are. And especially as you're talking about like AI and ethical AI, you know, thinking about the cross section between blockchain technology and all those, right? Blockchain, you have a open, transparent, shared data source, right? The ethics associated with that, what can be transparent, what needs to be preserved privately. And then also on the AI side as well, right? Especially if you talk about automated trigger points for smart contracts, you know, when the algorithm is making the decision making, is it, you know, sometimes people can wonder, is it actually safe? So I don't know, like, if you could elaborate a little bit on that, like,
just to really brief on some of the thoughts I've had on this, would be, as I said, I think one is looking at blockchain in these DAOs, and then how that then can have legal forms such as NGOs, where you can have sort of the benefits of decentralization in nonprofit activity and socially beneficial activities, that then would have those legal protections. And one, I think also if you're talking about the digital currencies and then looking at the central bank digital currencies, I think one aspect, I don't know any jurisdiction where there is a direct input from the users of currency, right? Just by owning a dollar, euro, yen, pick your favorite currency, that you then have a say in the central, you know, central banks generally are not very democratic institutions. So, and then also, if you were to make it sort of a more democratic institution, would you set it that each unit, so the dollar or yen or whatever, would give you a vote? Because then it could be very undemocratic in a democratic sounding way. So you can imagine as you're moving towards IoT and this sort of world where the code becomes the law, if those deciders of law are those who hold the most tokens or coins or currency, then you will lose what is sort of understood as the main democratic principle of one person, one vote. So I think that is something really, one thing to safeguard, but also in thinking about how you can expand that participation of people who are using, you know, currency, for example. I mean, if you're going to expand the money supply, mm-hmm. or if you're going to be using that for, you're going to channel resources into the sustainable development goals and green technology and, making policy changes to how, what is the policy behind that central bank or that banking authority? Because currently, for example, in the US, I mean, there's price stability and full employment. In Europe, I think it's just price stability. There's many different policies that are there. But the new thinking is also putting that the capital is channeled towards, you know, green technology, for example. So giving people sort of a say in the system that they're using, because that they're sort of holders of those values. But then do you give more rights to people who hold more of those units? Or do you say at some point from a human rights based approach that, you know, everybody gets sort of one say just as being human? In how this system works, so that, you know, that sort of then there's an equality there. So I think that that's, those are really very live debates. I think that that will come ultimately in the design, and then all, and how public, obviously if these are then private, if these are owned by private entities, the likelihood that you'll get those social outcomes in the way I just discussed seem unlikely. Especially if you see how those are set up now, because usually making sure what the founders are, you know, they get the most coins. So I do think those are very live debates. I don't know if we're having those debates yet, but I think the technology makes that possible, right? I think that's the first thing people just should be discussing, is what has actually become possible with this, and then what will we as people, as societies, as governments, do with that possibility, and what ability as individuals can people have a say in the system that's being created, and not always by them. You know, there's many. I think that's also this human-centered design. We're looking at all the people that are really not clear as to what actually all these changes that are occurring. And I think out of that becomes fear and misinformation. I think also addressing that, but also making sure there is something for everyone. Will obviously increase the participation and excitement for the future instead of a lot of fear. But these are some of my issues.
Mm-hmm. So Mark, if I'm summarizing correctly, then a lot of the policy and regulatory implications as well as oversight should be more or less on the consortium governance. So thinking of the different organizations that participate within a blockchain network, and then how do we govern them to make sure that the policy and regulations are equal and transparent, and I mean, mostly focusing on equality, right? Making sure that everyone has that vote, but how do we cut and define what that vote or say in that network means? Is that?
Yeah, I mean, to use an analogy, I mean, those are sort of the constitutional rights in the system, and then how that all then, yeah, that is sort of what is your constitutional basis in those consortium governance? And then how then does all that flow from that basis in, as you scale up? Let's assume you're scaling that across the globe. I mean, how's that functioning to work? And making sure that those constitutional principles, you can think of them as guiding principles as well, but honestly, how fit for purpose they are. And just being very clear on the policy outcomes that are embedded in there, I think is really, so that people really have a clear understanding what that means. Mm-hmm. But I do think first you have to start generally, you know, you're starting from sort of a principle base. So what are your high level principles? And then looking at, you know, building that down into more standardization, and then what policies and then code would represent that. And then, you know, obviously testing that to make sure that you're achieving those policy outcomes that sort of have been promised, whether you're aiming or if not achieving those principles in the actions that are being, you know, captured in that system. So I do think that is, policy is going to move, and this is sort of my own, again, my personal view, but I do think so much of policy will be moving into this digital format, which I find very exciting, because you can get incredible enforcement and compliance with those policies. But because of that, I think then you have to find really, you have to have a human-centered approach. I do see that. I mean, so often, you know, I just make this very small comment. In Germany, people stand, they really follow the streetlights. I mean, I'm from the US, so I didn't follow the streetlights so much. I would just, my mom, even as a child, would just teach me look both ways. You could argue that policy is, there's very low compliance, therefore all the people are, you know, insubordinate. Or you could take the view that maybe the policies then should be, you know, interpreted flexibly, or the policy should change. Maybe that light shouldn't be there, or that light isn't working. So I mean, this is generally my three approaches. And I think when you're making digital systems, this question is going to come up again and again, because if you're going to make it that it really isn't fit for purpose, and you're going to create either a lot of non-compliance, or do you find flexible ways inside the system for the people to decide where those boundaries are with some limits, right? I mean, then what threshold are you allowing for making those policy changes? That is sort of in the consortium governance. But I think this is what makes that whole, that much more dynamic. Because if you have a stop sign that no one really likes to stop for and it doesn't make any sense, or a street light that everyone's crossing on, I mean, it does speak, there is something that speaks for itself. So it's very hard to change those things. And I think in this system, this can become much more dynamic or much more rigid, which I think is, if you're looking at the risks, I think that's also one of them, because the compliance will be enforced in the system.
Mm-hmm. No, it's definitely, you know, an excellent point. And it's one that, you know, I think with, you know, as these use cases scale up, and especially, you know, in line with what you've been saying, right, as these use cases scale up, it's going to be more pressing. And how do we manage and add new member organizations to these large scale networks and ensure that those policies are, you know, are understandable and they're relevant. So, you know, I guess just kind of bringing it back a little bit, just to summarize a little bit about our discussions today. So I think, you know, I think we have some great topics to really elaborate on and bring, you know, more substance to. So I want to get your opinions, but so I'm thinking what we could do is have a very high level talk about overall decentralized society, transparent philanthropy, and immutable governance, just very high level, and then look at diving deeply into each of these topics that we have here, really discussing kind of the future implications, trends, et cetera, of those for other blog posts as well. Sean, does that sound good?
Yeah, no, that sounds good on my end. And yeah, I should be able to have something. And now, should I send it directly to you, or is there like a hub we would work from just to, you know, if we were to make like an Excel or something, or I don't know if there's like a schedule of how we want to produce them, you know, roll them out, if you will.
Yeah. So the best way is we can start tracking them on the Confluence, the wiki pages.
Mm-hmm.
And I can send out the link in a sec.
Okay.
But what we can do is just start tracking right here.
Ah, WorkStream.
Yeah, WorkStream. I know we have. Okay, so the use case and best practices. What we can do is here's this one. We also have this like chart. We can just repurpose this and.
Okay.
And yeah, and we can use this and start putting some dates as to when we think would be best. Probably the best way is we want to roll something out like once a month or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Keep the community engaged, but not more frequent because it takes time to write these and get
right them. Exactly.
So you know, think about it that a little bit, and maybe in the next meeting we can discuss like, hey, like, do you think, you know, you'd be ready like, you know, October or November or something like that.
And, mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, that's perfect. And I guess my last question would be, as far as like, let's say we wanted to do a three-part series, you know, just for instance, hypothetical, would each, I'm assuming obviously each one would want, you know, you want to discuss you want to discuss blockchain, but as far as, you know, sort of, I guess, as far as the detail, you know, should we stay high, you know, high level as far as the, you know, some of the industry problems, or, you know, how deep do we want to get into, and how deep should it be focused in the focusing on the actual blockchain application of it?
Mm-hmm. That might need to be determined on a per use, per case basis.
Okay. Gotcha.
But one thing that, you know, initially when I had kind of drafted this, this section was,
mm-hmm.
You know, I didn't want for us to focus too much on these are the only ways to go about this issue, or
mm-hmm.
and be kind of a definitive kind of article, but more focus on, you know, these are ways or ideas to kind of get, you know, folks going and start thinking mm-hmm. about these different problems, especially
gotcha.
On how blockchain. So like kind of this focus, you know, the sentence right here, right? Like the discussion just really meant to serve as an idea generator.
Gotcha. Not, I see.
Yeah, but obviously we can highlight, you know, different use cases that have been implemented, But kind of leaving it up open to the public, you know, for their insights.
Okay. Yeah, no, that's perfect. That makes a lot of sense.
Awesome. Sounds good. Anything else that anyone else wanted to discuss before we end the call today?
I was just going to say, just tiny comment was on this idea. I mean, maybe just a format would be this foresight storytelling. So telling it as sort of a story might help captivate the imagination of people, really, to see, like how sci-fi is very good at that. But I mean, sort of in the more near future, what a very, you know, optimistic and optimal view of this could be, and maybe more of a dystopian or highly, you know, flawed system. And sort of then, I think between those two boundaries, one can then start seeing the realm of possibility and then hopefully moving towards that more optimal view. Just a suggestion. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that could definitely be really, really cool. All right, sounds good. So thank you guys all. This is definitely really engaging, and looking forward to getting, you know, these out there and seeing what the public feedback is going to be.
Thank you, Nancy, for hosting, and I'll reach out to those two individuals and see if they'd be interested in presenting at our call.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Have a great week.
You too. See you all. Have a good one.